You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
The here district, the captain of this vessel, Captain Marcus Johnson here. First mate Chris Johnson. I don't know why I kind of lapsed into a Robert Shaw from Jaws type of thing. I don't know where that came from, but hey.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
Let's get down to brass tacks, as they say.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Game two. Game two.
Yeah.
Now, going into it, we had talked about a couple of things. We talked about how the Pacers were not going to continue to, you know, go 0 for 13 and just struggle the way they did. They were the ninth best three-point shooting team in the league this year, right? I mean, 37-plus percent from the field. So you knew, I'm a big believer that, you know, that the percentages will even out. So if a team struggles and looks doo-doo one night, then you can best believe that next night, especially in the playoffs, they're going to come out even more focused and just play better. I mean, they missed a lot of open threes in game one. So they shot the ball extremely well, what, 45, 46%, whatever it was, for the game.
Yeah.
But my impressions overall, I was impressed with the Pacers because Bucks made a couple of nice runs. And now, here's the point, though. They had the Bucks on their heels, you know, pretty much all game long after about the first 4 or 5 minutes when the Bucks came out strong. And that's a testament to a couple of things. Rick Carlisle, his staff, you know, getting this team, Lloyd Pierce, former head coach in the league, but getting this team prepared, ready to play, but also the kind of talent that they have, starting with their leader, Tyrese Haliburton, but Pascal Siakam. Man, he's got to be dealt with. We talked about him a little bit after game one, and my thing was like, well, if he gets 35, 36, and you can keep everybody else in check, it gives you a chance to win. But what were your overall impressions, Matt, game two?
Well, I think to your point about Pascal being in check, like these dudes, like Pascal got his 37, but then these dudes were hitting all their shots.
Yeah.
Like the Pacers had four guys that had over 70% from a true shooting standpoint. Miles Turner was a bucket.
Yeah.
Nebhard was a bucket. And these buckets that these guys were knocking down on jumpers, they were answering the call. They were answering Bucks buckets, right? Yeah. And then the fact that, and you said, we talked about, me and you were talking earlier about the pace, how it was a little bit slower, but it seemed like the way that Indiana was attacking the Bucks, right?
Right.
It just seemed a lot faster. It seemed more targeted. Like, we are going to try, you guys are going to have to guard us, stop us from getting downhill every single time down. You talked about it on the broadcast, how the young guys were simulating the Pacers by not taking the ball out.
Right.
Well, you know, we didn't, you know, it didn't seem like the Bucks were ready for that type of thing game two. I don't know why that happened, but it was just an interesting lack. For me, it was a lack of a sense of urgency that they had in game one. They looked totally different defensively than they did in game one.
Yeah, and that's a valid point. And to your point, a couple of things. It's funny, the Pacers were one of the top teams in terms of pace, no pun intended. 102 possessions per 48 minutes. I forget the number, but it was over 100. First game one, it was about 96 possessions per 48. So game one was slower. This game was even slower. I mean, according to Ben Falk's Cleaning the Glass site, one of the top sites out there, you see it quoted in every major article. But Ben Falk, according to Cleaning the Glass, the Pacers had 87 possessions. But, and here's the big deal, their points per possession in those 87 possessions was 1.4. per possession, you know, 140 points over, you know, 100 possessions. So 1 point, that's high. That's in the 100th percentile. I mean, that's the best that there is out there. Their effective field goal percentage, 65%. Effective field goal percentage,
that's
when you factor in the 3-point shot along with the 2-point field goals, 65%. That's in the 100th percentile. And then you couple that, Chris, with a turnover percentage of 4.6. They didn't turn the ball over.
That's
in the 100th percentile.
Taking care of the ball.
I mean, all these 100 percentiles,
like
you're not going to win a playoff game or a series by continuing to allow your opponent to operate in the 100th percentile offensively.
unless you're matching them on right. the 100 percentile offensively. And the Pacers did a great job of locking down the Bucks on the defensive side of things. Yeah. It just made all the Bucks just took a lot of tough shots.
Well, the Bucks
everything seemed.
Well, but the Bucks, their points per possession, they were like, 1.19. They were in the 79th percentile, but.
That's pretty good.
But no, it's okay, but compared
it's
to...
It's not matching, though, but it's not matching the Pacers. This is playoffs, so this is blow for blow. Yeah. This is eye punch back every single time. You saw what the Pacers were doing in the second quarter, the third quarter, I believe. Like, the Bucks would knock down a shot, take a lead. Pacers come down, hit a three. Bucks go down, make a layup. Pacers come down, hit a two. I mean, it was like a blow for blow. So we're in the playoffs. It's a whole new season. As you know, MJ, I'm not telling you nothing new, but it's like the Bucks got to have... that mentality, that ruthless mentality, to where we're going to punch first and we're going to keep punching the whole game.
Well, and here, and I'm not going to get too crazy with the numbers, but the final number that I like from cleaning the glass is, so we talk about the half court. If you slow the Pacers down, you're helping your case a lot more compared to allowing them to get up and down in transition, getting a lot of easy buckets. But first game, the Bucks points per possession, 85 points per 100 possessions. So in their half-court offense, the Pacers. Last night, the Pacers, 131 points per 100 possessions in the half court. Their execution in the half court was flawless. Their ability to knock down those three-pointers that they would, Miles Turner killed us in the mid-range and at the three-point line. I call him Nimrod, but Nimhard.
Called him Nimrod on the broadcast
because he's evil. He's an evil old devil. But Andrew Nimrod and Nimhard. I mean, and my thing is that you could withstand Siakam possibly having a big game if you can keep everybody else at bay, but the Bucks could not keep them at bay. And the other thing was that the Bucks would do a good job executing offensively, swing, penetrate, kick, shot, make, whatever. And then the Pacers would come down, one pass, score, with 5 seconds gone off the shot clock. Just quick scores. Siakam, early post-ups on Dame Lillard, early post-up on Pat Connaughton. And when I saw that happen, that always is a red flag for me that this is not sustainable for the Milwaukee Bucks to win this game. They're scoring way too easily.
52 points in the paint, 14 points given up in fast break points by the Bucks. One of their two major points of emphasis, they did not fit the bill. Giannis's absence is everything. Let's just keep it absolutely 100.
Right.
No rim protection, no rim attack on the other side of things. Giannis's presence just changes the complexity of everything. But the Bucks can still win without him there if they play. They got to play a perfect game, MJ. They got to play that style where they don't make mistakes. Dame, I don't know what was happening in the second half. Maybe Doc was trying to get Chris Middleton going, but it was less Dame, it seemed, in the second. I would love to see Dame continue off of these great first halves and keep it going, especially in this next game. In a hostile environment, that crowd's going to be hyped. Everything's going to be turned up. We're going to need Dame to hit big shots all night and answer the call.
Well, and this was my concern after that 35-point first half in game one. He was 0-for-5 in the second half. Now, you can credit the Pacers and how they defended him and sent extra body. But in the first half, in the game last night, or the first half of game two, Dame has 26 points. And they're sending guys at him. They're doubling him. They're doing everything that they did in the second half in game one, they did in the first half of game two. And he still found a way. So Dame, I believe, has got to just continue to try and dominate offensively. I don't care if you got three guys on you. If you can, he did a couple of plays. One play last night where they tried to double. He kind of veered to his left. He still got around. Split. I think maybe kicked it to a. So if he stays aggressive, not only is he going to manufacture points and shot attempts and fouls and free throws for himself, but the resources defensively he will attract enough to open up some outside shooting for some of these other players, I believe. So he's got to stay aggressive.
There's no other way. There's no other way the Bucks are going to win game three unless Dame Lillard plays that aggressive style of basketball to where he becomes the most important player on the floor as far as attention. He already is. But, we're going to need this in the second half. We're going to need him in the third quarter. These third quarters, the Bucks just got to come out better. They got to come out better, punch them back in the mouth, maintain that energy that they start off the game with. I mean, you see it drop. I mean, if you look at the game score, 33 minutes, the Pacers led 48 minutes. minutes. That's just crazy to me. And the only time that the graph was green was like in that first, like first quarter. It's all yellow. If you go look at it on NBA.com, it's like a green graph for 16, 15 minutes, and it's all yellow. It's all Pacers.
Well, he's got to tap the Tissot. Tissot is a watch that he endorses. He got to tap the Tissot. The whole time he got to be in tapping Tissot mind.
Tap that fang.
Tap the Tissot mindset.
Tap the Tissot.
He got to tap the Tissot the whole time he's out there. And I understand.
Let me ask you something.
Go ahead. But I understand the mindset. Okay, well I'm double, I'm triple. You know, I want to make the right basketball play. We don't need all that. Tap the Tissot. Get out there. And like I say, if you draw three and you're on the move, you're attacking, you're going, you know, north-south as opposed to east-west, you're gonna draw enough defense where it's gonna be some easier shots for Bobby Porter. They was up in Bobby's crawl.
Stuff.
I'm from the south. You're getting your crawl, stuck in your crawl. They was up, where's your crawl at? I don't know. I gotta look that up. But they was up in his crawl last night and just wouldn't allow him any space to kind of get free, open jumpers, try and get by Miles Turner in the left corner. Turner, quick feet, kind of. So it's some answers, some serious. You know, Bucks will be watching a lot of film today, and I trust this coaching staff to try and figure things out. One thing I want to you go ahead first, and then one thing I want to throw at you. Go ahead. I can see you chomping at the bit.
I just feel like. When the Pacers have all this young energy out on the floor and this youth and these guys that are able to guard and move and run and play at a certain type of pace, and the Bucks have guys that are out there that can't match that pace, I feel like sprinkle in some young dudes. Get Ajax in there. Get in A.J. Green. I'm just saying from a standpoint of like when you see those dudes come in the game, it's a real obvious difference in their energy.
Major fourth quarter.
Granted, they hadn't played all game. I get all that. But there's something to be said about these young dudes and the energy they can provide 3-4 minutes, give some dudes a break, throw a wrench at the Pacers, right? Because you're going to have to make adjustments. Everything's going to be about adjustments moving forward, MJ. You know that. So it's like, what are our adjustments? What are the wrenches we're going to throw out? I think a young guy in there early will help, will do something to make them adjust.
Yeah, and you know, I can't think of the new name of the building in Indianapolis, but I'm someone called it Market Square Arena like it was.
Was it Bainbridge?
Market Square. Mama called it Market Square. I'm going to call it Market Square. It's Market Square.
Oh, you're going to have the Pacers fans on your head. The Bainbridge.
Let's get the naming rights correct. I know it's a whole sponsorship deal. But the Market Square was off the hook. But that place is hostile. Ooh. That place is hostile. These fans going to be juiced up. They sense like blood in the water to a shark. They sense that's the beauty of the playoffs. From one game to the next, we throw the first punch. Now they have to regroup. They come back and they throw a haymaker. They got who was that? Thomas Hearns after somebody Sugar Ray Leonard socked him in the head. Thomas Hearns was kind
of in the back of the head.
Hearns was kind of like legs got rubbery.
He lost his faculties.
And that's how the Bucks. That's what the Bucks look like. They look like they've lost the faculties, the janitor, the groundskeeper, the coaches. They lost everybody. You know, and to the Bucks' credit, I mean, they did a nice job trying to keep the game, stay connected in the third quarter. It was an 80-82 game, but then just a bunch of missed opportunities, missed layups, Dame, missed layup, Brooke, missed open corner, three, Jay Crowder, missed open jumper, Bobby Portis, Chris kind of struggling. To Chris's credit, I thought he might be done when he went down early, had to go back to the locker room. To his credit, he got back out there, fought, battled, and played well. You know, played well, especially you knew he was dinged up some, but I'm with you to a certain extent about maybe trying to infuse a bit more youth. I mean, AJ Green looked okay.
I'm not saying play these guys a ton of minutes. But spot situations, you sub a guy in. Hey, let's throw a wrench at these dudes when
the Pacers put in the Belmont Bruin. Ben Shepherd. You know, so now you put in.
Match him up.
You know, Ajax or Marjon Bochamps. You know, that gives you an opportunity to match up inexperience with inexperience and just kind of see how it plays out because you never know.
But, also that energy thing. Yeah. Like, you know, Ben Shepherd's everywhere. He's running. Ooh. He's moving. He's all over the place. He's doing extra stuff. No, so AJ now can provide that same type of thing because B's and J aren't necessarily moving as much as that.
Well, and here's the thing. Like a guy like Andre Jackson Jr., who we affectionately call Ajax around here, but Andre Jackson Jr. is one of the best on this team for sure, but one of the best guys in the league, just chasing down loose balls, getting to loose balls. And you don't understand the importance of that in a possession-to-possession type of situation as a playoff game. If you can beat your opponent to three or four loose balls during the course of the game, keep your offensive possession alive, that's huge. That's huge in a game that's 86 possessions long. You know, 86 possessions over 48 minutes. Every single possession becomes magnified, man.
But let's talk about, though, just like we're going in and we're coming up with all these type of hypotheticals. And obviously, Doc Rivers has a trust level established with his guys. He believes in a certain crew. He believes in certain dudes. So like what we're talking about is like not being inside of the situation and like what we're seeing from the outside. Sure. My thing is, though, do you feel like that this game three, that Doc it will be more open to going deeper in his bench early because of what all the factors we're talking about? Or you think Doc is going to stand pat with what he's been doing, trust the guys that he's put, you know, his trust in and just rock with that same crew?
Good question. And not trying to be overly diplomatic and avoid it. I could see the way kind of playing out. I mean, Doc is an old school kind of coach. He doesn't have a lot of comfort, is a good way to put it, with the guys who struggle to score. You know, and so like Pat Connaughton can get hot shooting the basketball. A.J. Green, we know what he can do when he gets hot. Jay Crowder, you know, he's proven Jay in finals situation with the Phoenix Suns. I think it was against us where that he could knock down big threes under, you know, Ajax, you know, we don't know for sure. Marjon Beauchamp, we don't know. I remember an assistant coach with the Bucks. I was wondering why they didn't play a guy that I like, DJ Wilson, in the playoffs after he'd had some good games against Toronto during the regular season. And I won't name the assistant coach, but he made a comment like, "Well, Coach Bud's afraid DJ may crap in his pants, just overwhelmed by all the pressure, you know." And so I think it's a little bit
that's
of that kind
thing.
Of, but you don't know until you throw him out there, and he may surprise you and have the game of his life. And I think Andre Jackson Jr., I have every confidence in the world that he would not get overwhelmed. You know, he may make some mistakes just through, you know, adrenaline or whatever, but it's not going to be because he's shirking away from the bigness of the situation. So I'm hoping, because playoffs are such a game of adjustments that you know, Doc, I think is probably looking at the film, looking at the youth of the Pacers and how much that hurt us, coupled with the fact how well Rick Carlisle exploited that youth. I mean, they were flying up, makes misses. It didn't matter. And then, as you mentioned, the pace wasn't that fast, but it's like the Spurs of old with Ginobili and Tony Parker and all those guys. Their half-court movement, if you were able to clock that, you know, that speed of their half-court movement would be off the charts, and that's what hurt us. We couldn't keep up. We just couldn't keep up. We were always behind the ball, a couple of steps behind the ball, and that led to some easy shots at this team. Ninth in the league in three-point field goal percentage. They knocked down in game two, unlike they didn't do in game one.
But it's the 52 points in the paint. So what that does, that makes everybody sink. That makes everybody have to pay more attention to those dribble penetration. Them guys made a concerted effort to get downhill and beat guys and then kick the corners. And then once it gets to the corner, it's swing, swing, swing. And those dudes were money. I think it's going to be tough for the Pacers to keep shooting at the clip that they shot at. Like that was an unbelievable shooting performance. Right. It wasn't just the fact that they made so many shots. It was the timeliness of the shots. And let's talk about Siakam for a second. 16 field goals, 31 field goals in two games. Like, you got to get this guy on the line. He can't just be handing out buckets at such a prolific pace.
Yeah. And I don't remember exactly what he finished with in terms of 3-point. But the first game, he was 1-for-4. He was 3-for-4 at one point. I'm not sure how many more he made than three. But most of those were 2-point field goals. And he is so skilled, at especially against Brook Lopez. Getting Brooke on the move, stop, reverse pivot, little fade in the paint. I mean, Chris Middleton, whoever was guarding him, he was a handful. So now, do you double him? Do you try and get the ball out of his hands a bit more? We'll see what Doc does with that. But I hope that Doc, we'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting. Let me put it that way, to see if Doc goes a little bit deeper into his bench. And let's keep it real. I mean, A.J. Green, I love him. You know, he's probably due to have a really good shooting night. But if he's not hitting that 3-point ball consistently, like he hasn't done so far, now you might want to look another direction. He's a young player. He can handle that, and he would understand it. Then also, we haven't talked about Malik Beasley. You know, and Beasley's kind of been lost in this whole situation. Yeah. You know, he's thrown out there with the crew that winds up mopping up the game in the last few moments. He's second in terms of career makes on three-pointers made this season. Over 200 threes made the last three seasons. I just feel like there's a place for Malik in here somewhere that maybe we could do a better job of utilizing.
Doesn't seem like Doc it has the highest level of confidence in Beasley right now. You know, second half, he didn't come back into the game until like a long time. Like, he sat out a while.
Well, he got a turnover.
And that was a trip to me. Threw
a pass away, got pulled.
And then he was out of there. It was like, you know, so Beasley's got to get locked in. But it goes back to the B. Jennings thing about the ruthless nature of playoff basketball, punching first, like all those cliches that we hear all the time about it's a heavyweight title fight, but it's like an attitudinal adjustment that needs to happen in the Pacers arena, in Bain Market Square arena. Okay. There needs to be an attitude adjustment. There needs to be a business trip type situation going on with seriousness, and like dudes are, cause this is life or death, man. Yeah. If we lose, the Bucks lose game three.
Yeah, and I'm going to call this out.
It's going to be tough.
I'm going to call this out right here. Like I did when we were playing against Atlanta the championship year, I mentioned that Jeff Teagues could help us because of his quickness. And I got, what did they call it on Twitter? I got ratioed. Everybody was like, that's crazy, Marcus. You're out of your mind, Marcus. Jeff Teague is
They ratioed you.
Yeah, they ratioed. They ratioed your dad on Twitter, dude. They ratioed me, man.
They were
calling it out. You got ratioed, Marcus. You got ratioed, man. I wanted to, like, meet me in Temecula. You know, I wanted to go that route. But I didn't. But I didn't. But the point is that we played Jeff Teague, and he had like a 12-point game in a row. And so, so you don't have to go back to him again, but he allowed us to win a game. And so you need to figure out if it's Malik Beasley, if it's Andre Jackson Jr., Marshawn Beauchamp. I don't know. There's somebody on that bench. And Malik Beasley, I'm going to call it out. I think he's the guy that I want to see, I really believe and trust, because I've seen it this year, that he can have a major impact on this series if given the opportunity because of his shooting ability. But he's also tough. He's young. He's 26, 27 years old, whatever it is. And he's a tough-minded player when he's locked in and he's playing with confidence, which he's struggled with a bit over the past few weeks. But, I mean, hopefully he can turn this thing around. So that's the beauty of playoff basketball, man. It's all about adjustments, all about game to game, just in terms of, like you say, who's gonna punch first and how that punchy is going to respond to it. So, man, that's something to look forward to. Game two. Chris Johnson, Marcus Johnson here on the Here District. What a show. Brandon Jennings, once again, all the love in the world. Thank you for stopping by. And, man,
appreciate you.
Man, this is a fantastic voyage. However it turns out, Chris, this is just great to be a part of, great to watch, and the coaching chess match between Bobby Fischer and Boris Spassky, the chess masters,
Gary Kasparov
going at each other, man, and that's the beauty of this time of the year. So, I want to add this before we sign off. Rick Carlisle, you know, when I knew he was going to be a good coach, Chris, I was over in Hawaii when Josiah was at Pete Newell's big man's camp. Rick was one of the coaches, Nene and Skittis Vile, who Kiki drafted in Denver. I don't know why. And some other, Tayshaun Prince, they were all over there. And Josiah was working out with the college kids. And Rick Carlisle, we were talking. And so I talked about shooting for him and how, you know, shoot, with your hands across the seams. He's like, well, no, the best way to shoot is to go with the seams because the basketball is smaller in this particular area. And he showed me how you could palm the ball easier. It fit into your palm a lot more snugly. And that just was, something that opened my eyes. So he's a great coach. He's a fire marshal, Bill. You know, he's gonna make the adjustments that need to be made, and that's the beauty of it all. But I think Doc and his staff are up to the task of handling it. It's just how the players are able to execute what they are tasked to do in Game Three. So, but that's it. Here, District, Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, fantastic voyage. We will see you, hear you, talk to you, be with you on the next episode. We out.